Thank you. I just want to let you know that the trainings were funded by an unrestricted educational grant from Pfizer. I have no personal relationships to disclose. I'm glad to be here this afternoon to discuss this important issue with you. I'm going to start off talking a little bit about the problem of tobacco dependence among people with a mental illness. Almost half of all tobacco consumed in the United States is consumed by people who have a current mental health disorder. And interestingly enough, smoking causes more death in people with mental illness than suicide or any symptoms related to their mental illness. And more recent data has shown that people with a serious mental illness die on average about 25 years earlier than the general population. So I like this slide to help people to get a perspective of the smoking prevalence among folks with serious mental illness. If you look all the way on the left, the current smoking prevalence of doctors is about 3 to 4%. The national prevalence of smoking is 19.3%. The smoking prevalence rate in 1960 was about 50%, and that was when everybody was smoking. And the current rate of smoking among people with a mental illness or substance use disorder is estimated to be upwards of 70% and can be even higher. Among people with serious mental illness, the rates vary by illness. So folks with schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and PTSD have the highest rates of tobacco use. So what kind of treatment are people with mental illness getting for their tobacco dependence? From a review of the research, we found that nicotine dependence was documented in 2% of mental health records. Only 1.5% of patients seeing an outpatient psychiatrist received treatment for their smoking. We know that psychiatrists have the lowest awareness of quit lines in state tobacco services, and less than half of outpatient substance abuse treatment programs offer smoking cessation counseling or pharmacotherapy. So in New Jersey, we developed a unique model, which we call the Mental Health Tobacco Recovery in New Jersey model, of overlapping services, with the goals being to increase the demand for services among mental health consumers and to help smokers quit. We recognize that little is being done on a national level to address this, this epidemic, and few models have really emerged to address tobacco among this population. So the areas that we worked in with smokers were helping them to get access to medication, training a peer education force, advocacy, in the clinical treatment area, engaging smokers into treatment, implementing wellness curriculums, adapted cessation programs for people with mental illness, and one of our ongoing initiatives is staff development and training. So what we wanted to do is focus on the environment. Since 2006, we've trained over 400 professionals in treating tobacco dependence amongst smokers with mental illness. And we wanted to know what happened after we trained them. We didn't have any long-term follow-up outcomes to see if any changes were being implemented. So we wanted to have a series of trainings in order to collect outcome data on practice changes post-training. We wanted to provide training in all three of our spheres that I just showed you and measure changes over time through follow-up interviews and technical assistance. So prior to the trainings, participants completed surveys online. Participants who wanted ongoing technical assistance were asked to complete a needs assessment, which all participants did. And participants were then contacted at 3 months and 6 months post-training to assess practice changes. Participants identified quality improvement initiatives at baseline, and we would assist them reaching their goals through technical assistance. And the goal of technical assistance was to mentor the behavioral health professionals who were beginning to address tobacco, and also for us to generate outcomes on the effectiveness of our trainings. So the three trainings that we conducted, the first one addressing tobacco in hospital settings, that one's actually coming up this month. implementing a peer workforce for outreach to smokers and increasing motivation for treatment, and implementing a psychosocial intervention for working with mentally ill smokers. The last two trainings were offered. We had low attendance for the first two trainings, 17 total attendees for April and June. We have 55 registered for our November training. All of the participants who attended, like I said, completed the needs assessment, and a little more than half completed follow-up interviews by telephone. So we asked at baseline, how does your agency address tobacco? And we were surprised pleasantly that a lot of people were saying they were addressing tobacco in some ways. 18% said that they had a peer education program. 59% said that they had clinical services in place to address tobacco. 53% said that they had a prescriber available to write prescriptions for pharmacotherapy. 47% had a client policy about tobacco. 35% had a staff policy. About 50% said they had tobacco-free grounds. And only 24% had a quality improvement initiative at baseline that they wanted assistance with. So we asked participants what existing factors they had that would help them address tobacco. Some said they already were running a tobacco group, whether it be education, cessation, or support. Some said that their staff were motivated to address tobacco, and some said that they already had a tobacco treatment specialist and other staff or counselor available to treat tobacco. And these are responses that were endorsed by two or more people. The list of barriers was not surprisingly long at baseline. There were the common threads of fears, lack of interest by clients, ambivalence by staff, no tobacco-free policy, client and staff fear of the unknown, no curriculum available for tobacco group, staff training was a barrier, no funding available, low client attendance in tobacco groups, and just kind of getting tobacco group into the schedule would be a challenge for some folks. What was great to see was that at follow-up, there were changes in staff motivation and support, and this was through follow-up phone interviews. The first one, over 56%, endorsed that they experienced a change among their coworkers and among the clients in terms of getting support for addressing tobacco. Some of them had started implementing tobacco groups, specifically the one that they were trained in by us. And they felt that attitudes about treating tobacco was changing among providers and clients, that people were saying that they were concerned about the health of their mentally ill clients and wanted to help them to address their tobacco. And around the same time, two of the agencies had gone tobacco-free, so it was a nice coming together of the initiatives at their agency. What was a positive thing to see was that there were less barriers endorsed on follow-up. And these barriers were congruent with other research and systems change. There wasn't any funding for programs. The campus was not tobacco-free, which was presenting challenges. Obtaining nicotine replacement for clients was difficult. A lot of folks were trying to, kind of navigate the insurance systems for them. And addressing tobacco while already managing other job responsibilities. We found a great group of folks that wanted to take this on, not receiving any additional funding or any additional support, but it was challenging for them to continue. So some of the limitations of our study were that it was a small sample size. Like I said, the largest training is taking place in November, so we'll have more data after that. We received responses that follow up from participants who were most motivated to make changes at baseline. And we only received responses from half of the folks that completed the needs assessment, so we were wondering if those were the people who didn't make any changes, who, kind of minimized the difficulty at baseline in terms of addressing tobacco of their agencies. So we're just kind of brainstorming to figure out what we can do to help reach folks in the future. So some of our next steps are to complete the 6-month follow-ups. They are underway. To understand the barriers of quality improvement and technical assistance, and to continue to evaluate the impact of all of our future trainings on practice changes. So some of the conclusions were that participants who took part in the training and technical assistance were integral in addressing tobacco at their agency. So the good thing is that we reached the right people. Many of the changes were occurring with little to no outside funding. Several participants stated that the technical assistance was vital in helping them continue to address tobacco and to maintain momentum. And the satisfaction with the quality of the trainings remained high. Okay. Anybody have any questions, comments? Thank you.